Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and the nature of consciousness. We feature a stellar roster of special guests, so both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about this program and the abundance of support and services that we offer, please visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. This week I'm very pleased to have the author of a brilliant book entitled Hello from Heaven, which is about after-death communication. Welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. Bill Guggenheim. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Juliet.
Good to have you on Toward the Light, and I've really been looking forward to this.
Definitely my pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful having you. And I know that Judy isn't with you, but she's the co-author, of course, of Hello from Heaven. And I would like to ask you, Bill, what was it that got you interested in after-death communications, or as we paraphrase it, ADCs?
What really interested me the most is when I was attending a five-day workshop with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Oh, yes.
The Swiss-born psychiatrist who had written all the books on death and dying and whatnot, and she related an experience she had with a patient of hers. The patient came back to her 10 months after the patient had died. And I was at the workshop, and there were only about 70 of us there, and Elizabeth had everything to lose and nothing to gain by sharing an experience like this with us. And I was dumbfounded to hear how someone who had died had come back to her. And she saw her and spoke with her and everything. And she was just told them about the experience as though it was just as natural as could be for anybody to have something like this. And that changed all my beliefs, just hearing about it. And when I came home from that workshop, which was in 1977, I began looking to find other accounts, and I didn't know if I would or wouldn't find them, but I began to, and I found one here and two there and another one here, and I spent years just finding accounts in all different places, all different time periods, but it was obvious something that was very, very common, and many, many people had accounts where they sensed the presence of someone who had died, or they heard their voice, or they felt their touch, or actually saw them, things of this nature, while they're wide awake. And yet nobody had ever written a book on this topic. Nobody had ever done any research on it.
And I think that may have been the same workshop, if my memory serves me correctly, that PMH Atwater also ended up. I know that she connected with Elizabeth as well, and that catapulted her onto her path of researching NDEs and so forth.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, I know PMH.
Yes.
And we've known each other for quite a few years. Actually, this was a series of workshops Elizabeth gave called Life, Death, and Transition.
Yes.
I attended in 1977, but it had been before that, and again, I attended another one 5 years later in 1982, so... She gave many of them throughout the world, and so that very likely was one of those workshops that each of us attended, yes.
Well, I remember that she started that right after she had her three near-death experiences in 1977. So it's interesting what a beautiful service that Elizabeth has done, you know, really bringing this into the consciousness of other people, and after you had the experience of connecting with her, all of a sudden, it's sort of like a magnet. Your consciousness is there, your alertness is there, and all of a sudden you start encountering um, all the, you know, a myriad of people who have had these experiences, and of course I've had them all of my life, and they're very natural, just as you said. They're as natural as breathing.
Yes, well, we eventually conducted 7 years of research, and we interviewed 2,000 people and collected more than 3,300 firsthand accounts. So based upon that and our work and some other people's work, we estimate that at least 60 million Americans have had one or more of these after-death communication experiences, which is one out of five people.
Okay, so, you're talking about just in America, so let's...
That's just in the United States. United States, one out of five people. And I'll get to the other parts of the world later, but may I give a definition of what it is we're talking about so
your
listeners can know that? By our definition, an after-death communication, or an ADC, is a spiritual experience that takes place when someone is contacted directly and spontaneously by a family member or a friend who has died. By this we mean their direct experiences, because there are no third parties involved. There are no mediums, no psychics, no Ouija boards or anything like that, no devices. And they're spontaneous because the one who has died chooses when, where, and how to contact us. And we say a family member or friend. By that we mean somebody, the person who knows or has known before the person died, and their, or member of their family at least. And so this is not about ghosts or anything of that nature, or hauntings, things like that. That's, we don't include that within our work.
Right.
It's somebody that person definitely has been related to and interacted with.
And a lot of what this work is about is removing the stigma and the fear surrounding it and all that hoo-ha. You know, really,
yeah, well, at first we didn't know when we began our work in whether we would find 25 or 50 people to interview or whatever. But as it turned out, we interviewed 500 people the very first year we began our work, which was in 1988. And so we just kept going from there when we wound up, as I say, interviewing over 2,000 people.
Now, how did you make contact with these people, Bill?
Basically, wherever I went, I would try to get 2 or 3 minutes to speak to a small group of people. And just say, have any of you had an experience whereby you've been contacted by a loved one who has died? And many people had no idea what I was talking about, but I could tell by other people who would be smiling, nodding their heads, something like this, that they had had some kind of an experience. So I would go over to them and get their name, address, and phone number. And we did 200 interviews in person, and after that we switched over to doing it by telephone, simply because the distances were greater and greater. And also we would get a little announcement put into news letters of many, many different bereavement support organizations of all different kinds. And then we had actual newspaper stories on our work. There were 2 of them that came out during the 7 years of our research. And those were sent around the United States and Canada and contained our name, our address, and our phone number. And people contacted us. In one case, it was over 600 people just for one story.
And did you find it as you were connecting with more and more people, or spreading the word, as it were, that more people started feeling comfortable and volunteering their information?
Yes. Well, at first, there were people were shy and reluctant. Many people had never shared their experience with anyone, except perhaps some very close family members or friends, but they didn't talk about this in general. And they were very relieved to know they were not the only person who had had an ADC, or after-death communication experience. And they were validated by our work because they knew they weren't going crazy or losing their mind.
There you go, yes.
And just like the early days of near-death experience
exactly.
research, whereby the people did not talk about them. They didn't want people to think they're crazy or fantasizing or making it up or whatever. And so it was much more difficult at the beginning. But as we went along, it became easier and easier because people trusted us and they'd refer us to other family members or their friends. Because people often shared these with others who had also had an ADC. So, but by their talking to somebody, they found out that other family members might have had one, that kind of thing.
That is excellent. Did you give talks or write articles about any of this so that people could understand more clearly?
We began our research in 1988.
Uh-huh.
And the next year, 1 year later, when we were brand new at doing this, we were invited to the National Conference of the Compassionate Friends, which was here in Tampa, Florida. I live near Orlando. This was in Tampa that year. And we were invited to give two workshops. And in our very first workshop, we had over 300 people waiting for us to say something and tell them something. And that was our first workshop. And we were not bereaved parents, which is very rare for them to invite anybody who is not. But they trusted us, and our second workshop was over 200 people. And we were invited back over and over and over, and of course we met more and more people and collected names and addresses and phone numbers as we gave workshops. We gave as many presentations before our book was ever published in 1995, 96, as afterwards at that point. So it was just people were hungry to hear about this. There was that much interest in it.
Yes,
and we were the only ones doing the research.
It's like this wonderful wave came over people and just started drawing them together. And
yes.
I go through this all the time, of course, too, because of this work that I'm doing. And people will be talking to me or I'll give a presentation or even after listening to a show, they say, my God, I thought I was crazy.
Yes.
And then after hearing a presentation, they realize they're not, and that's such a huge part of this work, isn't it?
And well, we were invited, for instance, I was familiar with the International Association for Near-Death Studies because I had an interest in that topic, and we were invited to give presentations at those conferences. And we've given conferences for many, many support groups, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and on and on and on, all kinds of groups. Right along, before Hello from Heaven was published, and later on after it was published. So it's just, when people want to hear what you have to say, it's very exciting to be there and to be invited. And this was our ministry. We'd never accepted any money for any workshops we've ever given, any appearances we've ever made. And we fortunately had the money to be able to do that. And it's always been so much of a delight to be able to share this information with people and have them share their experiences during the workshop with everyone else who was present.
That's lovely. Now, how did you happen to find out about IAMS?
Well, interestingly, in 1977, I went to this five-day workshop with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross in Florida. And like many people, I wanted a little bit more of her. So I learned that she was giving a workshop up in Georgia. And I flew up to Georgia, attended a workshop with her, attended a lecture with her up there. And I was on the stage afterwards waiting to go say hello. And I met a man named John Audette. And John Audette went on to be the founder of IAMS. He's actually founded the organization before IAMS existed. That's a long name. I won't go through that.
He's a wonderful man.
He's the one who started IANS, and later on, IANS came into being. But this was in 1977. He did his work in near-death experiences, and then that later became IANS in 1981.
Yeah.
And that was, again, coincidence. Is there such a thing as coincidence, though?
Well, there's coincidence and synchronicity is what
yes.
I like to think of it.
Coincidence. Coincidence, as some people call it. But I believe that there's something much more at work here than just random chance of these things happening. So I've met I've had a tremendous interest in near-death experiences, so I've met almost all of the major researchers and authors of books and that kind of thing in that field since 1977.
Well, it's interesting that myself, I'm a combination of a multiple NDE and one who's had ADCs all of my life. And, you know, there's a wonderful article on my blog that I wrote, ADCs. Friends at the factory, and these were actually people who were on the other side who were still hanging out in this workplace, a former factory in Franklin, Tennessee. And every experience that I had was verifiable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so special, and I felt very sentimental. In fact, when I left that place, I was crying, and I said goodbye to all the deceased mates, and of course, it's only their bodies that are no longer intact, but they are very much intact. And I think that's a big part, you know, the point of this work, whether we're discussing ADCs or NDEs or what have you, is the fact that consciousness and selfhood do survive death of the body. We do not cease to be alive, very much alive. And so it's a very powerful and magical thing to be able to share this information.
This, to me, is the most valuable part of the work, besides helping those who have had an experience to recognize its reality and to acknowledge that they've had it and what it means to them, but what it means to other people as well. But basically, to me, near-death experiences, after-death communications, and many out-of-body experiences all provide modern-day evidence for life after death.
Absolutely.
So it's not something we have to go back to a Bible or any other holy book or sometime long ago in the past, but rather these experiences are happening here and now, today, and all around us. And they say in some cases they have literally saved people's lives and done all kinds of good for people, because they're all based upon love.
Absolutely.
And the one point I'd like to make, especially for you and your listeners, is that people who have had a near-death experience typically have after-death communication, ADC experiences, afterwards as an after-effect, simply because for those who have a very profound NDE, they open up their intuitive senses. Some people might call it psychic ability, but I prefer to say intuitive.
Nothing wrong
senses.
With the word psychic, it's just another word. In
right, life. Right, but for many people it's a buzzword. And,
yeah, exactly.
And I try to stay away from the buzzwords. This is complicated enough and far out enough. But anyway, the point is that they go on to have these experiences afterwards as a natural part of their life. And so a near-death experience is not just something that occurs once, we'll say, or it's only may have one, two or three of them, but typical person might have one, but they have many after effects, and this is one of the most common of those.
Well, this is I'm really pleased that you're making this point, because indeed this is a big part of the after effects, and basically what happens when we do have an NDE is that our whole being is rewired and opened up hugely. So and we also return to that natural state of being aware, as we were as little children, and even just first coming into this plane, we're fully open, fully aware, and then the amnesia sets in, and then the conditioning sets in that blocks all of this. But having an ADC is just as natural as breathing, and I find that it's very important for people to realize that, and to realize that they are not crazy, that this is a fact of life and of the truest sense of the word life. So let's describe, Bill, some of the different ADCs, the different types of ADCs that can happen. Because
as it turns out, when as we conducted our research, we found that these fell into 12 major categories. I can't account for why it is 12, but that's what we found over and over. And when I say types of experiences, it's because of the wording that people use. It's their language and whatnot. And there are a couple of other smaller, tiny little categories, but there are 12 major ones that we devoted an entire chapter to each one in Hello from Heaven. And then within each chapter, we have 15 or so first-hand accounts. Each one is a complete short story. So Hello from Heaven really is 353 short stories in the experiencers' own words to describe what they had, what they experienced. And so as an example, the most common type is feeling or sensing the presence of the one who died. And this is typically occurs right after the death of the one who died. But people in our culture often say, well, I must be thinking about such and such person, about my aunt or my mother or my father, whoever it may be, and I must be making this up. So they devalue their own experience.
Exactly.
And if they go to share this with somebody else, the majority of people say, oh, no. Of course, you're just thinking about them because you're depressed and you're unhappy and you're missing them already and whatnot. But that can't be real. And so there's a tremendous amount of experiences that people have, if they go to the wrong person, will just poo-poo it for them and just say it's not valid at all. But if they go to other people who are more knowledgeable, they would say, yes, this is very common. And they'll say, I've had the experience like that myself, or I've heard of other people having it, and things of that nature. So sensing a presence is the most common one that we've had.
Yes.
And I'm going to speak about ones where people are wide awake, which is the majority. Other people hear a voice. Some people say they hear a voice through their ears, as you and your listeners are hearing me now. But the majority actually hear a voice inside their head, which is by telepathy or mind-to-mind contact.
Exactly.
And they hear a thought, and sometimes they're even able to have a two-way conversation by thought, by mental telepathy. And they go back and forth that way. Another small category, this is not that common, but is feeling a touch, literally a feeling, a tactile touch of somebody. So it may be like a kiss, a pat, a tap, a caress, a brush of the hair, touch on the cheek, maybe a hug, something of that nature. And all these are between two people who are very close in life, such as a mother with a baby, and only she would recognize that touch, or husband and wife, or somebody like that, or a person has a certain mannerism, perhaps, of always tussling somebody's hair as they walk by, that kind of thing. Because all these are, obviously, your listeners can tell, these are denote affection, nurturing, and love. And love is a common denominator of all of these experiences. A very large category is smelling a fragrance, an aroma. And it could be such as an aftershave or a cologne or a perfume somebody uses, or a favorite food you associate just with them, or a flower, or any scent. And what's interesting about this is a person could be totally alone, or they could be alone at work. They could have like an office at a large corporate company. We'll say, let's make it the middle of December in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, where there are no flowers whatsoever, inside, outside, anywhere, no perfume, no nothing. They can be at work and they can smell the scent of, say, lilacs. And they don't say anything, but they know intuitively that lilacs reminds them of their grandmother who died, who loved lilacs and grew them and used to give them out when she was alive and whatnot. And then another person could come along and start sniffing the air and say, oh, where's that? The lovely smell of lilacs. Where are the flowers? But and there aren't any, of course. But a third, or fourth, a fifth, a sixth, or more people can all smell them, even though there are none there. And so this is one of the categories in which there are more than one experiencer all having the same experience at the same time, or it's a shared ADC, as we call it.
Yes.
It's the smell of fragrance, and I don't know why that was the one that's probably the most common one to share, but it is. And we have one, I think, in which there are 12 people, all of whom smell roses following the death of a little girl after the funeral. And the only one who didn't smell the roses was the woman who was present, who had not known the little girl before she had died. So sometimes you get validation of these things in an indirect way of who doesn't have an experience or something of that nature.
Oh, yes, I see what you're saying, yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the most exciting, the most dramatic ones to write about, read about, and hear about are where we actually see the loved one who has died. So a visual after-death communication, or ADC as we call it, is quite common. We divided those simply because of language into two parts, where you just see maybe the person from the head and shoulders, or from the waist up, or the legs up, finally the whole body, but maybe it's not fully. Some of these are just like a brief outline. Others are more defined, but you can see through them. They're transparent. And finally, some people are, you can't see through them, but they're translucent, but they're still light and not fully solid. And then other people who have died, who have come back to us, are just as solid to each other as we would be if we were in the same room together. And that obviously is very exciting to read these accounts or to hear them verbally. And what I want your listeners to know, especially anybody who's lost a loved one, but through an accident or whatever form of death it may be, young or old, doesn't matter, is that regardless of the form of death a person had, when we see them, when they come back to us, and we're wide awake, when we see them, they appear healed and whole and in radiant health, healthier and happier than they ever probably were, even in physical life in many cases. And so if we have a loved one who died in horrible, say, automobile crash or battlefield death, like over in Vietnam or now Iraq, Afghanistan or someplace, or fire or explosion, whatever it may be, or a horrible debilitating illness, when we do see them, they come back again healed and whole and in radiant health, typically with a smile on their face, letting us know that they're okay. And they're, of course, in their spiritual body, not their physical body.
Exactly. Now, have you noticed also that, have you had reports that a lot of them will appear younger or in their prime of life?
Yes, many people who are elderly come back much younger toward the prime of their life. Some cases they do, some cases they don't.
Right.
But there's a tendency to go backwards in age. And a few cases, if it's an infant, they can go forwards in age as well. But typically, you see a baby or a child in the age that they did cross over it.
But, right. I've seen that myself, and I actually make a point of that in my article entitled The Dying Process from an Experiences Perspective. And I actually make the point that when someone is connecting with us from the other side, one will project oneself in a way that is easily recognizable, but that's not necessarily what they look like now. But and they're very radiant and strong and happy, and they can be young, or they can just take on a very recognizable form.
And what's interesting, let's say a child, and children have these experiences too.
Absolutely.
Let's say that their grandparent died, somebody they had not known ever when the person was young. If the grandma or grandpa comes back to them 20 or 30 years younger, they still know who it is, and is an instant recognition of that person. And so children, by the way, do have ADCs. We didn't cover that in Hello from Heaven, but we hope to add two chapters to our book, or maybe three chapters, and that would be one of them, because we did interview children who also had firsthand accounts with loved ones who have died.
That would be excellent, actually, because as I was pointing out before, children are more aware and receptive to having ADCs. And as you were pointing out, too, a lot of children will see, and this has also happened with child near-death experiences, that they'll say, oh, I saw my sister or my brother, and it was a child, a sibling they had no idea existed, and it was a sibling who had crossed over before they were born, or if it was a twin, and I'm a twin too, which is interesting, a twin who didn't make it over onto this plane.
Yes.
And then the parent will verify, yes, indeed, you did have a brother, you did have a sister,
yes,
you did have an uncle, what have you.
Yes.
So I think it's tremendous that you're doing work with children, because these are the ones who really need to be listened to, and they're not going to have the inhibitions that adults do.
Children are very interesting, because they'll start to tell an experience, but they'll kind of sense who will be open, who will accept it, and who won't.
Yeah.
And just like an adult, we don't want to be laughed at or dismissed or discarded, and so they'll purposely kind of lead into it, or they'll say something very casual, and if the mother, father, or the adult present seems to accept it, they'll tell more and give more details, and they might say, "I saw Grandpa last night." And if the person says, "Oh, you mean you had a dream about Grandpa," and they go to correct them and dismiss it, they'll shut up. But if they say, "Oh, really? Tell me how did Grandpa look, and what was his expression on his face? Did he say anything? Did he have a message?" And then they're open to it, then the child will give full details.
That's why this work is so important, so that people won't feel, like they're nutters, or that they're going to be disregarded. This kind of stuff is absolutely real.
Oh, very much real, very, very real. And these experiences are so real, in fact, that people remember them in great detail.
Yes.
10, 20, 30 or more years later. It's one of the high points of their life, in fact. And I won't say it reduces or eliminates all grief. Of course it doesn't. If you're a parent, your child, your husband, wife, your whoever it may be who's very close to you, if that person dies, you still go on grieving. And that's part of the human process. But it makes it a little bit easier, and it reduces the duration of the grief, and it reduces the intensity of the grief a little bit.
Now, you may be familiar with Dr. Alan Botkin, and he was on Toward the Light, and he does the work induced after-death communications, and that's exactly the point, that it reduces and eliminates grief. And he was at the IONS conference in Chicago in 2004, and it's brilliant the work that he's done.
Yes, I've met Alan. I sat through his workshop, and I'm familiar with his work, IADC. In our book, we very purposely eliminated any third party being present. Now, he found or discovered IADC through EMDR, as he calls it. He was doing therapy with war veterans who had post-traumatic stress disorder. And by moving his finger back and forth and having them with their eyes track his finger, they began having these experiences with their deceased loved ones. And that's
it
how it came.
Spontaneous, too.
Yes, and without any mention of it or any possibility of it.
Yeah.
All these experiences began occurring where they encountered or saw deceased loved ones, that kind of thing. But that he didn't even begin his work until well after our book was published. And so we were very, we had very strict standards in for Hello from Heaven, in that we didn't report anybody's work that involved a third party, such again as a medium or a psychic, or in this case a therapist who did any work with people who were bereaved or whatever state they were in.
But still, again, that's another validation, you know, that this stuff is very real and very effective and very helpful, and it's absolutely tremendous. Now, with the work that you're doing now, you are working on another book, do I understand?
Well, not another book. We just want to add two chapters to Hello from Heaven.
Ah, okay.
And really, there are some other categories, but they're very hard to find enough accounts. For instance, people have ADC visions, and a vision occurs during meditation or prayer, that kind of thing, typically, and they can, with their eyes closed or their eyes open, they can see right in front of their forehead a small picture of the one who died, or it could be a larger picture just suspended in space in color or black and white, and they're seeing through this dimension into that plane, that realm of existence where their deceased loved one exists right here and right now. That's very hard to describe in words, but that's a small category of experiences, and again, these are just like seeing the person, except they're not seeing the entire person in this dimension called physical life, but rather in the afterlife. And another topic is called twilight experiences. Again, this is where people say, "Just as I was falling asleep," or "Just as I was waking up, I had this experience." And we went by the people's own words. And if they would say, "Just as I was waking up, I had this experience of seeing my father," and then when they open their eyes, there is their father standing right next to them. Their deceased father is standing right next to them in the room where they were sleeping. And they wake up and they see their father or whoever it may be. And that's what we call a twilight experience, because they're half awake, half asleep.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, that happens to me a lot, in fact. And also another interesting thing, after an associate in Nashville crossed over, I had just gotten the word that he had crossed over, and I had just been with him, crikey, a couple of days prior. And, of course, I knew what he had looked like on the physical plane, but I did something interesting. I asked him, what do you look like now? Not what you look like on the physical plane, but what do you look like now? And I beheld a beautiful vision, and of course it was more like a luminous bubble, or even almost like the shape of a jellyfish or an inverted water drop. It was very, very beautiful, but very distinctive.
Yes, we've had some accounts. There are three in Hello from Heaven where the deceased one, loved one came back as the way that people would describe it, a ball of colored light.
Yes. Yeah,
and exactly. All different colors and swirling colors and whatnot, and it'd be very bright and different size and whatnot, but that they knew who it was, even though it wasn't even humanoid in form.
Right.
But they knew who that person was, and by the work of the one who wrote, I'm trying to think of the title of the book, I know it's Michael, I'm just walking to see his the names. Destiny of Souls and Journey of Souls.
Michael Newton.
Yeah. He speaks at length. There are quite a few accounts in his book of people appearing to each other just as balls of colored light.
Exactly.
And he writes not about life after death, but the life between lives.
Yeah.
And
brilliant.
What's very interesting about his work is that we, according to him, we choose to be born into this life before we're born. And we choose our parents, we choose our purpose of coming into this life and the reasons for it and what we're meant to learn or grow from and on and on and on. It's like an evolution of being a soul. And each of us is, I'll get to that in a moment, but as a soul we choose, we make all these choices, what religion to be, what race to be, what gender, what color scheme to have, what the time period to be born into, all these different choices we make in conjunction with other family members. And it's sort of like all going together, perhaps as a family, into a foreign country or something like that, in a way, to have all these experiences during what we call a lifetime. And when we're in that in-between state between physical birth and the interlife, as he calls it, we appear to each other basically as balls of colored light.
And that's actually how I experienced myself during my near-death episodes. And what's interesting, there's so many different types of NDEs, and some people will still experience a humanoid type of body when they're having their near-death experience. Then other people, and this includes PMH, we both experienced ourselves as these luminous bubbles or orbs, as it were. So I think that is determined on what dimension a soul moves into during a near-death episode.
Yes. Also, in her brilliant book, Backwards, Nancy Dannison describes encountering five balls of colored light. They're very brilliant, and there is a humanoid quality to them, but basically they're five balls of light, and they are her best friends that she's ever had in many, 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 many lifetimes, and they meet her immediately upon her when she crosses over.
Yes, she was on Toward the Light. It was a wonderful, wonderful show, and people can listen to the archives. We're talking about wonderful people here who are doing tremendous work to help people understand all of this. You know, the fact that communicating like this telepathically, and the interesting thing about telepathy, too, is that you know, we can have these telepathic communion with those who are on the other side as well as people who are on this side of existence, and it is not diminished by time or space.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. And we can learn all kinds of information, because people will say to us, well, how do I have an experience? And, for instance, maybe a father has it. Let's say they have a son who dies. And maybe the son comes back to the father, but the mother doesn't seem to have any experiences, and she feels left out, or could be the other way around. But many people have them, at least one-fifth of the population. But what about the other people who don't have them? And what we tell people, the easiest way is to learn how to meditate, because when we meditate, we open up our intuitive or inner senses, and that increases our ability to have these experiences.
Oh, perfect. And something that I've done, too, is that I just encourage people, it's not something you focus on hard. You relax into it.
That's right. You don't make it happen. You allow it to occur.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. And some people can give guided imagery without being suggestive of that this person or that person will come. But if you're open under certain conditions, people spontaneously may have an after-death communication experience that way as well. And I was giving a course many years ago before I ever thought of doing a book on this, and it was on forgiveness. And all I had in mind is that people would not choose anybody, but whoever would come to them during the exercise would be somebody else who was still in a physical body. And it was a small group, and some people had experience, some didn't, but there was one woman there who was very quiet afterwards, that I'd never seen her before or spoken to her. And she didn't say anything, whereas other people, they share different accounts and whatnot. And I went over to her afterwards, and she said yes, she did have somebody come to her, and it was her daughter who had died 7 years earlier through suicide. And this was the first experience she ever had of that daughter. And it was a very good one. And it did involve forgiveness, because suicide has so many stigmas attached to it, unfortunately.
Yes.
And both for the one who takes their life and for the family members who are left behind are stigmatized in our society, and with all kinds of weird thoughts and beliefs and about that, unfortunately. But this was a very positive experience for her. It never occurred to me. There was nothing in the wording to suggest it might be somebody who was no longer here. And yet there it happened, like very early on, and before we ever began our research.
And did you find that when people were giving details of these various accounts, that they were all relaxed, in a very relaxed state, whilst they had these experiences?
Well, relaxed and yet alert, and in many cases, for instance, we have six different, let me go through some of the more of the experiences, and then I'll cover that in a moment, because as far as being relaxed goes, the most relaxed we get is when we're asleep. So many people do have an encounter where they are asleep. We call them sleep state ADCs, or after-death communication experiences while asleep, except it may... People say they refer to them as dreams, like they don't have different language. I just say I had a dream, then they'll say, but it was unlike any other dream I ever had before.
Yes.
It was much more vivid and more real, and it had a beginning and a middle and an end. It wasn't fuzzy. It didn't slip away from my consciousness. It didn't have symbols. It wasn't fragmented the way usual or typical dreams are. And they will remember these 10, 20, 30 years later with absolute clarity. And the thing is that when we're asleep or that passive, that open, is when a deceased loved one can make contact with us the most easily. And if you stop and think about it, it's so difficult today. We're so busy that people try to contact us. They call us. We may or may not answer the phone. They get voicemail. People almost stopped writing letters altogether. Some send cards, but people don't write letters. They use email, which can be deleted, and people get so frustrated. We try to reach somebody ourselves, or somebody tries to reach us somehow by all these different ways, telephone and on and on and on. It may take several days to make actual contact. Imagine how hard it is for somebody who doesn't even have a physical body to make contact with us. But as I say, when we're asleep is when we're most relaxed and open and receptive. We're in that so-called alpha state. And by the way, I would like to say that what's interesting, we did our work within the United States and Canada, but what we learned during the process of this by talking to people from other parts of the world is that in many parts of Central America, South America, Europe, the Orient and whatnot, especially in the Catholic countries, the Spanish Catholic countries and Italian and whatnot, people are much more open, and they have these experiences as a matter of a living experience. In other words, they're very much part of their culture. They can have this type of experience at night. Loved one has died. They come, loved one comes back to them that night or a few nights, a few weeks later. And then they talk about the experience with their neighbors and their friends the next day.
Yeah.
There's that much acceptance of it elsewhere. But we are so, quote, scientific, unquote, so almost agnostic or atheistic in anything we can't see, feel, smell, touch, and hear, the five physical senses. Anything beyond that, we say, does not exist.
Right.
And they'll say, we're always challenged. Well, you interviewed these people, you collected all these experiences, that's anecdotal evidence, meaning an anecdotal, the way they mean it, is like not real. You know, and say, go prove this in a laboratory. Have you done? Well, you can't prove it in a laboratory. You can't make an experience occur in a laboratory. It possibly could, but it's just, have people sit there until their deceased mother or father or somebody comes to them, and even if they did, only that person themselves may have that experience. And so I say, if 60 million Americans have had an experience of some kind, it's up to the skeptics to prove that these are not real, and it's not the other way around. We don't have to prove that they are genuine experiences.
Well, actually, when I had Dr. Peter Finnick and Dr. Pemvan Lommel on the show, we were talking about this because, again, a lot of the emphasis was deathbed visions.
Yes.
And often the person who is having the deathbed vision, someone visiting or one of the hospice workers or what have you, will also simultaneously experience the same DVD.
Yes, I know exactly what you're speaking of, because deathbed visions were written about centuries ago, I mean, decades ago.
Yes.
And we also have accounts. Well, that's the other chapter where I want to write about it. We call it hospice-type experiences.
There you go.
But
yes.
We also have experiences where a hospice worker or a family member or a friend, somebody else who was there at the time, also sees the one person or a group of people who have come to help the dying person make his or her transition. We call those bedside experiences.
Right.
And another very big category is seeing the soul leave the body. We have many of those.
Yes.
And it's just people who are there at the moment that the person takes their last breath and leaves their physical body, and they then leave it either through the chest or the top of the head. Almost, it's always we're saying like a small whiff of smoke, a little wisp of smoke, a little puff of smoke, and then they form the likeness of the person who died in their spiritual body, and they may be one or two way communication then as well, and then they'll thank you, and then they'll leave. And then the third category is actually some people have either been in a state of meditation or fallen asleep or whatever, and actually been there to escort the one who died to the light, which sounds kind of funny because a near-death experiencer usually goes to the light on their own. But in this case, there are accounts, we have several of them, where it's a third party actually escorted the one who died over the countryside, so to speak, and through the woods, and toward the light, and they can see beings waiting in the light for the one who died, and when they reach the light, that person, the one who's in good health still, is told, thank you very much for being the escort, you may return now back to your body, and they do.
And that's a big one, too, because a number of souls, hopefully less and less all the time, but again, there's this fear associated with transitioning. You notice I avoid the word death because death is an illusion.
Yeah, we use the word transition. It's a transition.
That's what I used to exactly because that's what it is.
And yes.
So some souls are still timid, you know, to walk through that door, so they need an escort, just like you were saying, or somebody to help them along and say, it's all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it does happen quite a lot that the simultaneous experiences will take place.
Yes.
And another thing, too, is that I've spoken with a number of scientists, including one recently, Mario Beauregard, who's a neuroscientist, and he, with different laboratory tests, has been able to prove that we do have a soul, or rather, we are a soul.
Yes.
We've got a body at the moment, you know, and Dr. Claude Swanson, another physicist who's also validated all of this stuff scientifically. Now, what Mario Beauregard was pointing out is that these naysayer scientists, they're the materialists, they're the reductionists, and they don't know anything beyond what they can experience with the five physical senses, which basically in itself is an illusion.
Yes.
So, fortunately, we do have some, what I prefer to regard as the true scientists, like our Beauregards and Claude Swansons and Pim Van Lommels and Peter Finnicks, you know, who are really from the scientific platform proving and validating all of this stuff is real. And I can't understand why people would still want to be in denial about it, like Susan Blackmore. Don't get me started.
I know of Susan. I haven't met her, but I've heard of her and read of her. And what it is that we do live in a physical universe. That's one part of it, yes. And science, as we know it, really is our national religion. We don't realize it is that, but that's the way we look at life here in America, for the most part, even though people belong to churches and profess a religion, and a very high percentage of people, if they were interviewed, would say, yes, I believe this, and this, and talk about life after death. But when a loved one, a close loved one, dies, much of that belief falls away because it's what they learned as children in Sunday school. They haven't really thought about it, read about it, or examined it since then. I'm not making fun of anyone. I'm just saying it's something they grew up with and took for granted. But when a close loved one dies, they're very, very stricken with grief, very bereaved, and then they'll go to a minister or somebody like that who really doesn't feel that comfortable with these topics. They don't have a lot of training as ministers working with the bereaved. And they're kind of lost. So then they seek out bereavement counselors who are often very scientific themselves and used to regard these as grief-induced hallucinations.
And
created people that way. And some people we spoke to, about three or four, were even put on antipsychotic drugs if they had recurrent experiences with a loved one who had died. So as I say, science is very, very good for dealing with scientific reality. In other words, the world of the physical level, but then we have the emotional level, the intellectual level, and then the spiritual level. And science is very good with the physical level, and that includes our five senses and also all the machinery, everything from the telescope to the Hubble telescope down to the microscope. It's very good at operating at those levels of reality. But to go beyond that realize there's a much bigger reality than what science can presently detect and describe, it takes a leap of faith almost.
Well, there are multiple dimensions, and we are multidimensional,
living on
multiple dimensions simultaneously. And more and more people are starting to realize this, and that's why this work that we're all doing simultaneously is so valuable. And goodness me, we've only got a couple of more minutes. Would you like to share your website with our listeners and any upcoming events, anything special you'd like to share?
Nothing special to talk about, but our website is www.afterafter-death.com. And I was going to talk about out-of-body ADCs, and just like you started to say, we believe is that we are a soul or a spirit right here, right now, wearing or occupying a physical body, which we call our Earth suit. And from our point of view, what we've learned is that the only thing that dies is our Earth suit, our Earth body. We, the I that I am, the you that you are, the soul, the spirit that we are, it continues to exist.
Absolutely. Well, it's like my friend David Icke saying, it's as strange as the astronaut regarding his identity as a spacesuit. Well, it's the same thing with these Earth suits. These are not who we are. It's just what we've done in order for us to traverse through this physical plane.
And yes.
That makes perfect sense, but it's definitely not who we are.
Yeah, it's our Earth suit. We need this to operate at this level of reality for me to hold a telephone. Whatever, to talk with you, to everything we do on here on the physical world. Yes.
Bill, it seems so wonderful having you. We're definitely going to have to have you back on Toward the Light. This is tremendous, and I think it's going to help a lot of people to understand more. And, of course, you have got your page on towardthelight.org. And, again, the website is after-death.com. We've been speaking with Bill Guggenheim. He and Judy Guggenheim are the authors of a brilliant book, Hello from Heaven, about after-death communications, better known as ADCs. So we'll definitely have you back again.
I'd love to do that with you, Julia, because this is such uplifting work. That's why I love talking about it and having audiences to speak to.
It makes me very high to do this work, and it brings such joy. And any one person who gets a little bit more peace of mind is so worth it.
And basically, as or the book, the way our book ends, the final words of the book is that our essential message of the entire research and work is that life and love are eternal.
Thank you. That's excellent. Life and love are eternal. And another thing I want to remind all of you, it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale. You've been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Next week, we are going to have a special guest. Her name is Molly Harris, and talk about ADCs. She's going to be talking about the very special connection and communion that she's been having with her late husband. Very, very powerful. So you'll want to tune in next week for another transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you to please remember, only love prevails. We will talk to you next week. Blessings and light to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Amen.
You. Blessings.